I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 6th of August. And before we begin today's program, a heartfelt thank you to Amardeep Kalika and Pardeep Kalika and all who created last night's candlelight vigil at the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin in Oak Creek. An enormous amount of love and pain and kindness was abundant. And it's a night that I'm sure everyone who attended will never forget. We have two really good shows coming up for you this afternoon. Mickey Maynard, who has been called one of the shrewdest analysts and best storytellers in the automotive world, will be joining us in a moment to talk about a sea change going on in personal transportation. And the second hour of our show today, a book that has received so much attention, Zealot, The Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth. Reza Aslan will be joining us. And the book is now number one on the New York Times bestseller list. Curbing Cars, Rethinking How We Get Around, an ebook journalism project that looks at the reasons why people are driving less, is on our agenda for the first hour of our program today. The editor is Mickey Maynard. She is a Forbes.com contributor and a former Detroit bureau chief for the New York Times, author of The End of Detroit and How the Big Three Lost Their Grip on the American Car Industry. She writes, there's a sea change going on in the personal transportation area. People are driving less. Public transit use is at record levels. Bike sharing programs are popping up everywhere. Dozens of apps can help you find a taxi or a place where you can rent your car for a few hours. Home buyers want to live in walkable communities rather than have to drive everywhere. Young people are in no rush to get their driver's licenses, and student debt has put new cars out of many graduates' reach. In short, we are rethinking how we get around. Here's how you reach us this hour. Perhaps you are rethinking how you're getting around. I'm sure many of you are. Our phone number for Mickey Maynard is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. You can find us on Twitter at @KDunnShow. And the article that we talked about, which will become an e-book, is on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, where you can also leave some messages. Mickey, hello. Nice to talk to you again.
It's so nice to be back with you. Thank you.
Yeah, our pleasure. So I had no idea that we're not driving as much. You describe it as a sea change going on in personal transportation. I didn't know this.
Well, you know, this is a very big country. So for the needle to move in driving statistics takes a lot of stuff happening at the same time. And I knew anecdotally, people were telling me stories about, well, we went from two cars to one, and one of us works from home, and the other one takes the bus. And people were asking me, why aren't my kids getting their driver's license? But a new University of Michigan study sums it up. Since 2004, so this is almost 10 years, driving in the United States has dropped by 5%. Mm. So even if it had dropped 1%, that would be significant, but it's down 5%. And this is a combination of a number of things. It's people who are telecommuting. It's people who unfortunately lost their jobs and had to give up one or more of the family cars. It's people who are using transportation, public transportation, in record numbers, and folks who, for health reasons, have said, you know what, I need to walk more, I need to ride a bike, and even if I'm in the car, I don't want to be in the car as much as I used to be.
Mm-hmm. You also include, this is perhaps something that somebody wrote to you, that as a result of some of our natural disasters like Hurricane Sandy, it has changed people's use of cars because so many cars were totaled, right?
Yes. So Claudia Payne, she was one of my editors at the New York Times. She was at the Times for 30 years, won a Pulitzer Prize. She's just joined us as our senior editor. She lives in Long Beach, New York, which is one of those beach communities off the ocean. And their neighborhood took a terrible hit from Hurricane Sandy, and it's just been rebuilt. She's just back in her cottage this summer. And what she found was that that neighborhood used to be ruled by where you could find a parking space. The little downtown was clogged. Everybody drove everywhere. And now, since the hurricane, people have said, you know, I just don't need to drive all the time. I can take the bus out here. I can walk. It's close enough to walk. And so she said there's just been an enormous decline in the number of cars out in their little community. And that's because of Hurricane Sandy.
How expensive is it, Nikki? Do you have reliable figures that show how much it costs to own a car and drive a car for, say, a year?
Yes. So the average car now costs $31,125. Ooh. And that's almost a record. The record was set last December, but I'm pretty sure that with prices going up on the fall models that we'll break this record. So the folks at Zipcar, and I'm not sure if your listeners know Zipcar, but these are the cars you can rent by the hour. So you might need a car Saturday morning. You live in Madison. You go get a Zipcar, do your errands, and just take it back. For the typical person who lives in a big city, if they just use a Zipcar in the same way that they drive their car, they will save $500 a month on car payments, insurance payments, parking, things like that. So it's first you buy the car, you pay the payment, you pay the insurance. If you run into a tree next to your driveway that a friend has told me they've done, it can add up.
I know what you're saying. It sure can add up. I would think that if you're going to have alternatives, and I know that you look at cities like Boston, where they are really at the forefront of being able to drive something other than a car, or be a passenger on a bus or something, there are certain cities that are way ahead of others, right?
Exactly. So a lot of people think, oh, this is just a New York thing, this is a San Francisco thing, or Seattle or Boston. But if you think about it, pretty much any city can have bike sharing. Milwaukee can have bike sharing. Chicago has bike sharing. Uber lets you call a taxi from anywhere you want instead of waiting to get a taxi. It's an app that's on your iPhone. Zipcars are in an awful lot of cities. So it's spreading. It might not be that people notice it until they actually go to use it, but I can tell you that all of these options are popping up in many places in the country.
Are there people who are genuinely concerned, Mickey, about the state of the environment, and that is what has made them think about owning a car?
There are. I don't know if you saw the movie An Inconvenient Truth that
yes.
Al Gore mm-hmm. did. Okay, so lots of our kids have seen that movie. One of my nephews said, when I asked him about it, he said, yeah, we've seen it 5 times. So the more you see that message of being concerned about the environment, the more it kind of sinks in. And we already had an environmental movement before the movie came out. But it really prompted a lot of thought about what are the incremental things I can do to have an impact. And one of the things that reduces pollution is driving less.
Now, this is not necessarily an anti-car expose you're doing. There is no doubt that Americans are going to be driving cars for the foreseeable future.
Absolutely. So the best term that I've heard to describe this is driving light. It doesn't mean that you give up your car. I have a car, but I also have a bike. And the bus stops a block from my house. I live in a very walkable neighborhood. I've just decided I'm not going to make one trip to do one errand. If I'm going to go out, I want to make a list of 5 places to go while I'm using the car and then get back. You know, I work from home, so I don't have a commute. But even the folks that I know who still have to drive to work, the person who takes the car, you know, needs the car, takes the car, and the other person writes from home, works from home, can walk someplace at lunchtime, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. You have spent a number of years writing about cars for the New York Times and other issues as well. Are the big three in Detroit concerned about this development? Are car manufacturers throughout the world concerned?
Everyone that I know in the auto industry is watching this. And they're trying to figure out, is this something temporary? Is this something we can deal with by introducing new vehicles? They're not giving up on trying to attract young drivers. For example, they really want everyone to still buy cars. But, you know, I would flip it around and say that we'll have automobiles, but maybe the automobiles will be used by a group of people instead of just one person. Or if a family makes a decision on buying a car, they can't just assume that they have 2 or 3 cars in the garage. They might be buying one car. I just saw a statistic today that the age of cars on the road is now at a record. It's almost 11 and a half years.
Isn't that, something?
Average car is on the road. So you have to figure if there are people who take really good care of their cars, there are cars lasting 15, 20 years and more that people are driving every day.
Now, I know you've started a Kickstarter campaign so that you can do some traveling and find out what's going on all over the country.
Yes, the most important part of our Kickstarter, and it's just called Curbing Cars, if you go on Kickstarter.com. We are doing some research. This is a big country, and also Canada is also involved in this whole movement as well. So we'd like to do a little travel, do some one-on-one interviews with people in different cities, see these things for ourselves, and come back and tell the story. I also am a big believer in multimedia, so plan to do some audio. We plan to do podcasting and some multimedia pictures and videos, things like that, too.
You know, there's a part of me that thinks, Mickey, and you and I have talked about cars, and both of us kind of like cars, too. We look at the new models. We are remembering all the cars that we ever had. There is something that is so ingrained in freedom, mobility, being able to be an independent soul that is tied to the car, that it's hard to believe that this is going to catch on in a big way. What do you think?
Well, I agree with you that cars are part of American culture, and they have been for about a century. But I also think about all the times I've been stuck in Chicago in the mixing bowl, and all the times I've tried to drive quickly back from a weekend in Wisconsin down to Chicago and just got stuck in traffic that went on for miles.
Yes.
And I've thought, what if there was Amtrak? And what if there was light rail? What if, you know, what if I was sharing this trip with somebody else? And so I think there's a real sympathy among people who are just kind of fed up with the cost of owning a car and the cost of getting stuck in all that traffic. And at least, you know, they're not going to abandon cars completely, but they might try a train system if it was available, and they might try out a bike sharing project if they're down in Chicago and they just want to go from Navy Pier over to the Loop.
Are there a lot of bike sharing programs?
There are a lot of bike sharing programs, and far more than I knew about when I started researching this project. So the ones that you might have heard of are the Bixi program in Paris. So if you go to visit Paris on your summer vacation, you'll see these rental bikes all over the city, and there's one Bixi for every 73 Parisians.
Ooh.
And since the program started, I think 5 or 6 years ago, there have been 173 million rides.
Oh my goodness.
The Bixi system. So you have Bixi in Paris. You have London has a bike system. Boston, Chicago now has what are called divvy bikes. And you're starting to see these blue old-fashioned bikes riding all over Chicago. But that's not all. Bike sharing is super popular on college campuses. And there are over 30 college campuses that have bike sharing programs. Some of them are free to the students. It comes as part of their student fees. And then some of them are for rent bicycles as well. And you're just seeing the bike sharing pop up in every major city.
We're going to welcome phone calls. You can add to the research that Mickey Maynard is doing. She's the editor of this whole project. It's a major journalism project that plans to explain why it is there's a sea change going on in personal transportation. Why is it that we are driving less? Public transit use at record levels. There are bike sharing programs. She just talked about, I had no idea the program was that big in Paris. That's huge. And places you can rent a car for a few hours. We'll look more at whether or not it's desirable when you're looking for a place to live now, if you would prefer to be in a place where you can walk rather than having to drive everywhere. What does this mean for the car industry? Are you a family that has consciously decided you don't need three cars or two cars? You're trying to get by on one, or maybe I know there are a lot of people who use bicycles who listen to us. Maybe you've done that you're biking all over. What do you think? Is this the automobile not going away, but how much we drive and how we use cars and maybe share cars is changing? Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can Find us on Twitter at KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For you to join our conversation about driving less, we'd love to hear from you this hour. I'm sure there are many of you who have thought seriously about your cars and you're not driving as much, or you're biking. You are looking at a two-car family if you had three. I don't know how many families have three. Well, I guess if you have children who drive, some do. You've gone to one car, or you've rethought where you're going to live in the country based on whether or not you have to use a car. It's happening. Mickey Maynard is our guest, and she is doing a journalism project. Curbing Cars is the name of it, Rethinking How We Get Around. It's an ebook journalism project that looks at the reasons that we are driving less. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Email again is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Those are all ways that you can get a hold of us. And we will begin our calls with Shay in Minneapolis. Hi, Shay.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
I just wanted to point out, I think a lot of people might not be aware, that there's often one car company that's referred to as an example of the car sharing. But if people look at, in most, a lot of communities, there are more local companies. That's like a national one, uh-huh. And often those are more committed to the environment and making sure the cars are low in emissions and are used in environmentally friendly ways.
So you have in Minneapolis, what's going on, Shay?
Well, I know in Minneapolis there's a firm called Our Car, H-O-U-R, and they came out of the environmental movement, and I think they're competitive to those national ones. They just got a contract with the University of Minnesota, I know, but I just want to encourage people to look for often local companies.
Sure.
Do have that commitment to the environmental benefits of car sharing.
All right, Shay, thanks for the call. Are there many such companies that you're aware of, Mickey, around the country?
Yes, if you go to our website, curbingcars.com, there'll be a tab up at the top of the site, and we have many, many resources there, including a number of local car sharing companies around the United States and in Canada. So absolutely, you have local choices.
And those companies are growing?
Yes, and a lot of them are nonprofits. A lot of them have small fleets, so you may not be able to find a car instantly in the place that you want, but if you have some time to plan ahead, and especially if you'd like to work with a local company instead of a national brand, I think you'll have pretty good luck.
Mm-hmm. Barbara emailed to ask, are there cities, Mickey, with a place for seniors without cars?
This is just a fantastic thing that she brings up, because one of the reasons why driving is down is that a number of seniors have to give up their cars. Either they have medical issues, they have issues with their vision, or they just feel like they're too old to drive. So many, many transit systems are offering free rides for seniors. That's certainly the case here in Ann Arbor, where I am. And so I would encourage any seniors who are listening, if they can go online to check out resources, please do so and ask their kids to help them as well.
Or start a movement in the city in which you live to ask for free transit for seniors, right?
Absolutely. The other thing I wanted to mention was that we're not really talking about driverless cars, but one of the whole reasons why auto companies are looking into the new technology is to assist drivers who might have a little bit of trouble staying in their cars after a certain age. So a lot of this is assisted driving rather than nobody in the driver's seat. And that's part of this whole issue as well. There are a lot of people who just have to give up driving because they don't have a choice. And I know the car companies are trying to make sure that folks can stay in cars longer, but public transit organizations are also responding by helping seniors.
Mm-hmm. What about the whole movement, Mickey, you would know about this, for cars that essentially drive themselves? You don't have to do much of anything.
Yeah, I don't want people to think that they can get into the car, turn on the key, and then text their friends or watch a movie on Netflix or something like that. That's not how these work. But this is also a traffic management issue, because there's a new system that's being tested here in Ann Arbor where there are sensors in the cars that talk to sensors in the road, and they're managing the street lights here so that if there's two cars sitting at a street light and no cars at the other street light, they might change it. They might change the stoplight so that the traffic can keep flowing. So the federal government is invested in seeing what they can do about traffic management as well.
Let's go to Lori in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to let you know that my husband and I are really interested in bike tourism, and Wisconsin is a fantastic place to ride bikes because almost all the roads are paved. And last week, we rode our bikes from Milwaukee to La Crosse, and we didn't use our car at all. It was a completely car-free vacation. We took Badger Bus to Milwaukee and rode our bikes across and then took a bus back.
Ooh, and you're in good shape, I'll bet, too.
Well, that's, you know, the funny thing is, before this summer, I had never ridden my bike farther than
really?
About 15 or 16 miles at a time. So, I think it's interesting to note that people don't have to be in spectacular shape to take a really great trip right out their back door on their bike. They can explore local places that they might not have noticed when they're just kind of rushing by on the interstate or the highway.
And Lori, were there enough trails to travel on?
Yeah. Oddly enough, it was really hard to get into Madison and out of Madison. But from Milwaukee to just right outside Madison, there's a great bike trail. And then we had to take kind of country roads up to Baraboo and Reedsburg, and then we got on the 400 bike trail, and then the Elroy Sparta trail, and then the series of trails that took us into La Crosse. So it was just fantastic. And, you know, we, on the bus, on the way back, we visited some of the towns that we had visited by bike, and it's amazing the difference. You know, exploring Baraboo by bike, there's a bike trail along the river. There's all this beautiful stuff that if you go to Baraboo by car, you might not ever notice.
Right. What a trip you've had. This sounds like fun, doesn't it, Mickey?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, one of my ambitions this summer was to spend more time on my bike. And I've tried to do that. This is the month when I'm getting really serious about it. So everyone I know who's a cycling enthusiast, I've seen some gorgeous pictures of Wisconsin, by the way. So everyone I know who's a cycling enthusiast is very, very excited that more people are understanding what they're excited about.
Mm-hmm. Just as certain cities have better public transit, I would imagine there are certain states that have much better bike trails than others.
Yes, so I wanted to just mention this idea of livable communities, livable streets. So there's a whole movement going on where planners are looking at ways that pedestrians, cars, and bicyclists can live harmoniously, get along, because obviously people will complain about cyclists that don't follow traffic rules, and then cyclists complain about getting doored, and you have this sort of anger that goes on out there. But I think the more attention that is paid to the needs of everybody, and obviously the needs of cyclists to have trails, the better off all will be, including motorists, pedestrians, and cyclists.
You know, thanks, Lori, so much. Here's somebody who needs to get in touch with you, Mickey, because I'm sure you'll want to interview this family. Brittany writes, my fiance and I have decided to go from having two cars to owning one. Our main reasons, I'm a college student. She just graduated with her master's, are the cost of fuel, doing our part for a smaller carbon footprint, and insurance costs. I just got a job specifically because it's walking distance to home, and turned down a job that would require me to drive 30 minutes one way.
That's great. If you go on our Kickstarter.com site, which is Curbing Cars, Rethinking How We Get Around, there's a place on there where people can send me messages. So again, on Kickstarter.com, you go to the Curbing Cars site, go to messages. I would love to hear from anyone who has a personal story. These are the kinds of things we'd like to feature in our book.
Mm-hmm. Mitch is next in Milwaukee. Hi, Mitch.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Great topic. I'm actually working outside today. Piggybacking on your guest comments. I was just in everywhere from Amsterdam, Holland, Belgium. It was just a wonderful trip up to Norway. But the thing that really impressed me there is, besides, you know, short track trains, for example, in Amsterdam, is we actually had to watch the bike trails. I don't know if you've ever been there, but the bikes rule there. And I think that's one thing our country, I think, could take great lessons from, is incorporating two-way bike trails independent of the road. So in other words, they have sidewalks and bike trails side by side.
I think you're absolutely accurate with your description that bicycles rule in that city, don't they? And in Holland, it's amazing how many people are on their bicycles.
Yes, so Amsterdam is actually the most bicycled city in the world.
Is it really?
And Holland absolutely is flat, so you can bicycle there. I wanted to mention one place in the United States that has those trails is, or those bike lanes, is the Stanford University campus out in Palo Alto. And I was out there to be a Hoover Fellow last fall, and it turns out that on the Stanford campus, there's something like 15,000 registered bicycles. And nobody's racing, nobody's cutting corners, everyone just kind of glides peacefully along. And it's really a wonderful sight to see.
Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's mm-hmm. what we have to incorporate is, yeah, bicycles can just glide by without having to worry about cars and just maybe pedestrians.
Right. Thank you. Thanks so much. I would imagine that you would need some kind of education effort because people are not trained auto drivers. If you had massive numbers of people taking bicycles to work or to shop or whatever, you would need to train some drivers about what the rules of the road for bike safety are, wouldn't you?
Yes, and I think that's been a great debate about bike lanes and cars and bikes getting along. People get very upset because bicyclists don't stop at stoplights. I'm not saying all, I'm just saying some do. The other thing is, you know, my dad taught me how to ride a bike, and most people learn to ride a bike from a parent or a friend, or they just go rent a bike and learn it. It's not like a car where you can't get a driver's license unless you've passed driver's ed. So there's definitely a need for more bicycle education, and that's a wonderful place for advocacy groups and nonprofits to step in. There's a huge cycling group. There are just cycling groups all over the country, but the bicycling alliances fill a very, very valuable role in this regard.
Mm-hmm. Email from Michael. The benefits of biking are vast. It's no longer easier to go to fast food drive-through, cutting down on fast food intake. I save $50 on parking, $450 on driving expenses a month, and I've actually explored Milwaukee much more, noticing the otherwise unnoticeable. Life is now about the journey, not the destination.
That's wonderful. And the other thing I want to add is, you know, we're Midwesterners. We know it snows. We know that there will be moments in January and February where you can't ride your bike.
Right.
But even if you park your bike from, say, January through April and ride it from April through the end of the year, you're still cutting down on pollution. You're cutting down on sort of that frustration of sitting in traffic. And also, I'm not saying, again, everybody gives up their car. You just add to the transportation portfolio.
Jack in Eagle River, hi.
Yeah, hi to you, too. I have two contributions to make, and after I finish the first one, I'll probably forget the second one. But the first point is, observation, I think it's supremely ironic that people with lots of money who live in places like the Outer Drive of Chicago or around New York Central Park, they don't need cars. This big expense that us poor folks have to almost are tethered to, we can't avoid it. And we spend the money on the cars, and those people, they can take cabs, of course, but they're within walking distance of so much. But I can't afford to live there, so I'm stuck with a car. And that was my first observation.
Yeah, but you're also stuck in Eagle River, and that's not so bad, huh?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's, you know, mostly yes, but it's a matter of being out in the country a little bit.
Right.
You're wedded to your car, and that's it.
Sure.
Second point is, when we go down to the Chicago area, we usually take the Fox River Trail, which is quite a long trail that goes from Aurora to Elgin. I don't know how far beyond that. And we're walking, and the cyclists are coming along left, right. They have no bells on their bikes anymore, and I think that's a terrible omission.
Mickey,
well, those are very good points. And one of the points that I wanted to make was a lot of the new city bikes definitely have bells on them, so that at least the rental bikes will be warning you that they're coming. But also, that is a good issue because the cycling world is many, many different types of people. And there are people that want to race, and there are people that want to own the trail. But then there are lots of polite cyclists as well. So I don't want you to give up just because you've had a couple of bad experiences. Please keep getting out there and using all kinds of transportation.
And what are the bells like on those rental bikes? Are they like ones when we were kids that had this, you know, round little thing, and then you had a little lever you pressed, and that's how it made it sound? Do you remember those?
I think they're a little sturdier than those These bikes are. The interesting thing about these bikes is that they're meant to be ridden at least twice, if not more than that, per day. So they have to be kind of sturdy, and they actually look a little clunky, but I think they're adorable, and they do have those little funny bells that. That we used to have when we were kids.
Yeah, Jack, thanks so much for your call. We have some lines open. They've been pretty busy. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. A journalism project is what Mickey Maynard is working on now. She's a Forbes.com contributor, former Detroit bureau chief for the New York Times. And she's doing this examination of how we get around. There was an interesting study from the University of Michigan that shows that people are driving a whole lot less. Public transit use is at record levels. Bike sharing programs we've been talking about are popping up all over the country. And she's engaged in an ebook journalism project that looks at the reasons people are driving less. And we're welcoming your phone calls, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Wayne and Lafarge is next. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, wonderful program.
Thank you.
I just have a couple of observations, and then we'll listen to your comments on them. One is just under the general idea or concept of decentralization of things, whether it's industry or where you get your food, fuel, medical, your social things. There was years back, various people that designed, whether it was Frank Lloyd Wright or people like him, designed worlds that were more decentralized, and thereby being places that needed less transportation. There were less transportation needs, and I was wondering what you thought about those kind of movements maybe coming back. And my second thought was, you could comment on, how much, the cyber world has changed this whole thing that we call transportation, or the need to get from point A to B. Thank you much.
Thank you, Wayne.
Well, I'd like to take those questions in reverse order, and certainly telecommuting and being online is a huge influence in people deciding not to drive as much. So there's another new study that literally came out this morning from the University of Michigan on teenagers and why they're not getting their driver's licenses, because only something like 28% of 16-year-olds now get a driver's license.
Is that right? Well,
yes. And it's amazing. If you think about it, when I was 16, I went right to driver's ed. I think I actually went to driver's ed before my birthday and then had to wait for my birthday to get my license. But these kids, there are 8 major reasons that they're citing for why they're not getting a license. And one of them is that, you know what, I'm online and I can do everything I want to do online, which is a little scary. But basically, they don't feel the need to get in a car. They can be with their friends on Skype. They can text them. They can get on chat rooms and talk to them. They're on there creating videos and playlists and all kinds of fun stuff that takes the place of getting in a car and driving somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the important issues. The other issue is just this idea. He was saying decentralized, but the idea of walkable communities. And so I don't know if you have seen those shopping malls that actually look like little town squares. They have... The stores don't just look like a store. It actually looks like a village. So that was kind of the first movement towards this whole idea of walkable communities. And it's so interesting that, you know, I grew up at a time when people wanted to move out of cities and go to the suburbs. And now empty nesters and even younger people are saying, I don't want to live out here. I want to be in the city where things are happening. And you're seeing something like 60 communities around the country where the trend is a reverse from the suburbs into the city. And what are cities except walkable communities? You didn't have a car in the old days.
More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about curbing cars this hour of the program. Mickey Maynard is our guest, and it is her latest journalism project. They have a Kickstarter campaign going on right now, providing funding for the ebook, and expect it will be published in 2014. So you can go to their website to get more information about all of that. Welcoming phone calls for her, 800-486-8655 is the number. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. I want to remind you that tonight, we don't want you to miss this because you had expressed interest in hearing Eugene Schultz, who's the author of The Ghost in General Patton's Third Army. He has had a remarkable World War II experience. He turned 90 in the month of July. He was also group was the first to uncover the first concentration camp to be known. They made it known to the rest of the world that this existed. And he speaks movingly about that, a story that he feels important to tell for his whole lifetime so that people will never forget. He's going to be at Boswell Books tonight, and that's on Downer Avenue in Milwaukee. It's free. It's open to the public. He's a charming gentleman who's written a great book, and his stories are worth hearing. So just wanted to let you know about that. More phone calls for Mickey in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is Mickey Maynard, and she is the Forbes.com contributor, former Detroit bureau chief of the New York Times, and working on this really interesting project, attempting to explain why it is that people are driving less, a whole lot less. And there are all these other movements going on, bikes in cities and public transit in places. So she's working on determining why that's the case. We go to Mary in Eau Claire next. Hi, Mary.
Hi, I like riding my bike, and you know, when I was taking classes and teaching some at the local tech college, I rode my bike when I could, but once winter came, the roads are ice, and the bike trails aren't plowed, and
it's not good. It's hard to ride your bike then. So what do you do, and what do people do, Mickey? I've seen some people ride bikes, but I don't think I'd do that in the winter.
Right, and that was what we were saying earlier, is that there probably will be times of the year when you can't ride your bike. And I'm kind of distressed to hear that bike trails aren't cleared in the wintertime. And maybe that's something that consciousness needs to be raised about. I've seen a lot of people in Ann Arbor, though, riding through a lot of slop. So people do it. But, for example, in Boston, I think they have a celebration on the day when they bring the bikes back, the rental bikes. You know, it's sort of like the ducks coming back to the pond, the bikes come back to the bike docks. So maybe that's the way to look at it, is that it's an option. It's part of your transportation portfolio during the months when it's beautiful out or fun to ride out. And then you use your car in the months when you absolutely need to. And that's what the whole driving light idea is about.
Thank you, Mary, for your call. Dawn in Madison. Hi.
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 I just have a quick comment. I hear people complain all the time that, oh, the bike didn't stop for the red light, or, oh, you know, you're on the bike, oh my God, that guy almost hit me or whatever. I really think that education is going to be the key, and it's not just educating those who are driving, but it's also educating the bikers. Everybody needs to know the rules of the road if they're going to be on it, and I think that that should be a requirement. You know, just like drivers have to take an exam to get the driver's license, I really honestly think that some type of a little test for people who are getting their bike licenses, you know, they should have to do that as well to prove that they do know the rules of the road, so that way there's, you know, more harmony. You know, people are getting along and not screaming at each other.
Well, that may not be a bad idea. Maybe it's being done. Is it, Mickey? You have to take some kind of test?
You don't really. But the nice thing about it is here's an opportunity. You can, the bicycle alliances, the coalitions can step up and do more on education. There might be a movement within the states to do that. You know, the one thing that everybody says is, I don't want my money spent on that. I want my money spent on fill in the blank. So all of our states, especially here in the Midwest, have other priorities for spending. But as I said, this is an opportunity maybe for cyclists to step up, maybe for the cycling coalitions to step up and just to make sure that our kids especially are trained in the right way to ride. And then if we as cyclists say, you know what, I'm going to stop at that stoplight. I'm going to use my hand signal when I'm turning. And everybody just makes an effort to be a little more conscientious, then others will follow.
Mm-hmm. You have written that cars are an essential element of American culture. The automobile certainly isn't going away. Can you talk a little bit about what the essential element is in the future of the automobile?
Well, obviously, as you just said, cars are not going away. And in fact, I think the auto industry will bump along right where it is. So let's give a little perspective. Back before the recession, car sales peaked at about 17 million units. And there were people saying by 2010, we'll be at 20 million units. And think about it, the public, the adult working public is about 150 million. So, you know, that's a pretty good number. Then the recession came, and in 2009, car sales fell to 9 million. So we had a peak of 17, we went down to 9, and now they're back to about 15. That's what people in the auto industry call trend. So 15 million, which is about 10% of the working adults in America buying new cars. I kind of think that's where we're going to be for a while. You know, folks thought we would be at 20 million by now. But all of these trends with people lost wealth in the recession, people are working from home, people are making a conscious health decision, public transportation is better than it has been, that probably means the auto industry kind of stays where it is. Mm-hmm. And so then you think, what will the auto industry look like?
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they ought to go in the business of making cars as well.
I'm sorry. The interesting thing for the auto industry...
bikes.
The bikes, right. Bikes, yeah, yeah, and certainly Peugeot has, as cyclists know. But what I was going to say was, for the auto industry, this then presents what will they offer the public, and what I'm seeing them offer of increasingly more expensive vehicles. So they will probably go for what I call the slice, which is the upper income consumer, and cars costing obviously $30,000 and up. And then everybody who doesn't want to spend that much thinks about other options.
I can't believe the average is $31,000, Mickey. That is so much money.
What did you pay for your first new car?
Well, I didn't get a new car for years and years. I'm trying to remember, and I think it was that horrible Ford Pinto. Remember that car? Oh, that was a bad car. It rusted out completely, and then it had some kind of problem with the gas tank, I think.
Yeah,
what did I pay for it?
Gas tanks.
It was probably $6,000, maybe? Or maybe less than that. Maybe less.
Probably
than
less. I had my very first car was a Dodge Dart. It was a very used Dodge Dart, and it was $1,200. It was my first car loan. And then I bought a new, in the 80s when gas prices spiked, I bought a new Toyota Tercel for $5,200. Hmm. So the idea of spending over $30,000 for a car just shocks a lot of people.
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does. We welcome phone calls. I don't mean to exclude you from the conversation, and you've been a big part of it if you'd like to join our conversation. And Mickey would like to hear from those of you who have changed your transportation model, your personal transportation. You might be driving less. You're not buying as many cars. You're holding on to your cars for a longer period of time. You have some personal experience with other cities, mostly in the country, where there is terrific public transit and you rely on that, or you're involved in biking, or you're doing car sharing, you know, where you need a car a couple hours a week and then you call this place and you rent a car for a couple hours. She says that this movement is really gathering steam and that we are experiencing a real decline, significant decline in the number of hours that we spend on the road. Or what about your living situation? Have you chosen, as somebody did on email, have you chosen to live in a certain community because you wouldn't have as long a commute? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show, where we also have a link that will give you more information about the curbing cars project. Mickey, are there certain cities when you embark on your big-time research for this ebook? Are there certain cities that are just terrific when it comes to low carbon footprint and people riding bikes? We mentioned Boston in the United States, Chicago starting to get bikes. Are there other cities?
Yes. One of the places that we're planning to go is Montreal. So I don't know how many folks have visited there, but it's just a fantastic city. I've been going there since I was 10 years old and I just love it. And they have a Bixi program, a rental bike program that has been expanding farther and farther out towards the suburbs of Montreal, which is very cool. And in fact, San Francisco is using that same model. They're not just going to be a San Francisco project. It's going to be Oakland, San Francisco, and all the way down to San Jose. So Montreal has a subway system, surface transportation, the bicycle system. It's an extremely walkable city, and they look at transit up there as a mix of everything. It's not just one thing competing with the other thing for resources. They really have done a lot of transportation planning to take advantage of the fact that there are a lot of places you can walk in Montreal, but there are also places you might prefer to drive, and then you could take a bike as well.
Sure. Scott in Manitowoc. Hi.
Oh.
Hello.
I was just calling because I was recently looking for a car. I have a significant commute each day, but it's surprising how few cars I can find that really beats my 2000 Cavalier. I get 30 miles to the gallon going down the interstate, and very few new cars seem to be able to top that unless you get those hybrids or even more money.
Mickey, you're...
I was going to say, how's the Cavalier holding up?
Oh, it's not going to die on me ever.
Well, then I would, if you're happy with it, do you have airbags? You have airbags, right?
I hope so.
You never want to find out. As long as you feel safe and as long as you're not having, you know, really expensive maintenance with it. You know, my car is 5 years old, and I don't see a need to get a new car. I feel like I have everything on it that I need. I know that's not great news for the car companies, but, you know, the average car on the road is 11.4 years old, and that's just the average. So you're a little above average. Mm. Think of it that way. Mm.
Thanks, Scott, very much for your call. An email from Jeffrey. I'm a walker now. I walk to work every day and ride the bus when I need to go a little farther on an errand. My employer provides a free city bus pass for all employees. I think Midwesterners are hung up on mass transit as they relate it to socioeconomic status. I am here to tell you plenty of millionaires rode the train into New York City every day from Greenwich, Connecticut when I lived there.
Right. And the other thing I want to point out is the city of Chicago just said that I think they've saved something like $7 million by switching over to the hourly car rental programs from owning fleets of cars. Now, they still have buses and things like that, but the city's basically saying, hey, we don't need to be in the transportation, you know, ownership business. We can use hourly rentals as well.
Terry in Milton. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you?
Fine. How are you, Terry?
Good.
Good.
I was wondering if you heard about this new form of transportation that's going to be coming out in the summer of 2014. It's called the Elio. It's a three-wheeled vehicle that is going to be offered for $6,800.
Mm.
It's going to get 84 miles per gallon, and it's going to have a five-star crash worthiness test.
Mickey, I'm sorry to cut you short, but we're almost out of time. Mickey?
Nope, I'm not up to date on that, but I'll definitely look it up.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. So give us the website again if you're gathering stories and also more information about the Kickstart campaign.
Right. So you go to Kickstarter.com.
Okay.
You go to Curbing Cars. Curbing Cars. You can send me a message there, and we would appreciate any pledges to our project.
Okay. Thank you, Mickey, so much. Always fun to talk to you, and you're always doing new ventures. Carry on.
Thanks for having me. I just love talking to people in Wisconsin. Thank you.
They're a good group, aren't they? Thanks.
Yes.
Mickey Maynard, our guest this hour. Mickey is a Forbes.com contributor, former Detroit bureau chief for the New York Times. And this is an interesting project, Curbing Cars, Rethinking How We Get Around. The ebook will be out sometime in the year 2014. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley for producing this program. And thanks for all of your contributions. You were on this topic in large numbers. Thanks so much. Please stay with us for next hour. It should be fascinating. Zealot, the life and times of Jesus of Nazareth.